love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, welcome to Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. Before we get into it, I want to take care of a little bit of business. First things first, my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. Many thanks to Ryan and the guys. They're fantastic. They have new products available all the time, new attachments for their amazing grinder. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. I'm a huge fan. I got a nice message from Ryan, and we're going to talk about that. And, you know, I'm appreciative of these people at Broadbeck Ironworks, and I only use their grinders. My other ones are good, but Broadbeck are the best. Broadbeckironworks.com, KNIFETALK10 gets you 10% off. Many thanks to my friends at Even Heat, manufacturer of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-chillin.com. Get that tap control solid state drive. If you're trying to harden knives or tools, or if you're a potter or you're a glass blower, you need to get that temperature correct. Get yourself an Even Heat. Stop playing. Evenheat-chillin.com. I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. It's Lawrence Lake. Got a nice message from Lawrence, which I appreciate. For all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forged press, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. They're in Canada. They ship to the United States with ease. So you take advantage of that exchange rate. And if you have any information, if you have any questions to him in regards to tariffs and what the customs and all that stuff, he is a very, very knowledgeable guy, and he is going to do the best he can to get you squared away. He's fantastic, and he's a facilitator, and I'm a big, big fan of Lawrence Lake. Go to maritimeknifesupply.com. Get yourself 10% off on those 10 packs of abrasive belts, and I'll tell you what. Stop. You listen to me when I tell you. I told you this for a long time. The Norton Razor Stars, people are starting to figure it out. They are the best. They are the best. So get yourself some from him. And I mean, I've been talking about it, and now all of a sudden people are starting to, you know, act like Christopher Columbus in regards to them Razor Stars. These things are awesome. Get yourself one of them at maritimeknifesupply.com. Many thanks to my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise, the T4 Sentinel Oil, and they sell knives, they teach classes, and they are fantastic. So go to TrojanHorseForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you get 10% off everything, and ain't get much better than them. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a huge fan of Trojan Horse Forge, and I appreciate them. Next are my friends at Baker Forge, BakerForge.com, or Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. For all your exotic steel needs, definitely get yourself some of that copper my, bronze my, sand my, all that specialized steel. They got the stainless, they got the bronze, they got all of it. And it's all ready to use. If you're a stock removal guy, they got you what you need. It's all comes annealed, ready to go. They hold your hand, tell you how to heat treat it. And then when it comes to finishing, you got to use that gator piss. You know what I'm saying? GATOR PISS, gator short for alligator, piss short for urine. This is the stuff that's going to set your knives apart, your steel apart. If you're etching with any type of Damascus, any type of stuff that needs to be etched, get yourself some of that gator piss. And if you go to BakerForge.com, you can put in the promo code FULLBLAST to get you 10% off your entire order. Or if you want to get some of that gator piss, you can go to my friends over at Texas Farrier Supply, TexasFarrierSupply.com. And if you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off there. If you're at Texas Farrier Supply, get yourself some of that Rhino Wet. Get yourself some of that those supplies for forging, for knife making, for farrier stuff, tools and anvils and all that stuff. Get yourself some of that Texas Farrier Supply. And many thanks to Texas Farrier Supply. Many thanks to Baker Forge. P.S. They got three new gator pisses. Get three new gator pie. They have gator piss, the straight up gator piss. They got the gator piss max and the gator piss heavy. Gator piss max is for that stainless Damascus, like the Damasteel and all that stuff, and the stainless Damascus that Baker Forge is using, and then all of a sudden you don't have to use that warmed up muriatic. And my sister would fucking hate this ad read that I'm doing myself. She would hate that I'm doing it, and that's fine. That's fine by me. And she'd groan, and she would say, "What are you talking about? We're going to get to it. Don't worry about that, Jenny. I'm with you." Many thanks to my friends at Baker Forge. Get yourself some of that gator piss. Don't worry about what Jenny would think. She's not here to correct you. She's not here to give you the trouble I am. I am. Don't worry about her. I'm telling you. Get yourself some of that gator piss and stop playing. Next are my friends at Total Boat. Totalboat.com/fullblast is the affiliate link to get you some discount and give me the street cred. I just got a load of their CA glue, which I love. I love their CA glue. They have different viscosities. They got thin, they got heavy, they got medium. I love it. I get the medium. I got a pile of it. Kristen sent me a grip of the CA glue, and I love it. And I use their two-part epoxy only, and I also use their specially formulated dyes when I'm dyeing my epoxy. So go to totalboat.com/fullblast. And if you're interested in all these different discounts, you can go to the show notes wherever you're listening to this, and the hyperlinks and all the deals are all squared away there. So many thanks to my friends at Total Boat. Many thanks to my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. It's GL_Hansen & Sons on Instagram. You go to gcarta.bigcartel.com to get that G-Carta, which is unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy with pressure. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm G-Carta, Pheasant, Colorama, Hoopla, all these amazing colors and razzle dazzle for your next project. They're easy to work with and easy to finish. I'm a huge fan of the G-Carta, and it's great, and you should definitely check it out. And just to let you know, if you're a knife maker, hey, listen, guys, I'm telling you, people are asking for it by name, so go check out that stuff. Many thanks to gcarta.pigcartel.com and my man Greg over at GL Hansen & Sons. Many thanks to my friends at Tormek, celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black TA Sharpening System. Go to Tormek.com or at Tormek_Sharpening on Instagram. I got a call from my man Carl Friends, who was on the podcast a couple times. He'll be coming down in the fall, and we're going to do a little video. We're going to do a little video shoot. And there'll be more to that. I'm sure he'll be on the podcast sooner rather than later. I love Carl, and I love the guys at Tormek. I just used the Tormek just now for sharpening a knife that went in the mail. Many thanks to them. And it's a water-cooled sharpening system that is not going to take... Listen, a lot of people are starting to tell you that you got to use your belts on your grinder. And one thing they won't tell you is they won't tell you that, I guarantee you, when you're holding it on them slack belts, you're going to get some undercut on the back of your knife. Oh, you didn't notice that. Well, I'm telling you, watch the life. Part of sharpening a knife is also sharpening your knife for the life of the knife. And if you want to do it right, get yourself a Tormek. You're not going to take too much off the heel. You're not going to play. And you're going to be taking off material. You're not going to be too hot. You don't have to deal with all this water misting, and you don't have to deal with it. It's self-contained, water-cooled sharpening system, and it'll get you squared away in a very economic way, and you're going to do it right. You're going to do it right. I'm telling you, I used to be a belt guy, and what I noticed was all of a sudden my heels were getting shorter and shorter, and I was taking too much material off, and all of a sudden that heel is a little bit, you're taking a little bit too much off the heel. I'm telling you, trust me, I've been there. I know all about it. So go to Tormek.com and know all about it. Next are my friends at Nordic Edge, Nordic_Edge on Instagram, nordicedge.com.au. They are a great resource if you're in Australia for knife making, leatherworking, spoon carving, blacksmithing. They sell a lot of great products, including their file guide, which is my favorite file guide I've ever used. And P.S., that file guide is sold at Maritime Knife Supply. But they teach classes. So if you're in Australia and you're thinking to yourself, I want to learn this stuff without having to buy everything first, go take a class at nordicedge.com.au. Sausage Man Forge is involved. Jamie's the man. Bjorn is the man. Mert Tansu is involved with those guys. And that's good enough for me if it's good enough for you. So they have the guidance to help accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas. nordicedge.com.au. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives. I can hear my sister being like, Oh my God, when are we going to be over? Don't worry, Jenny. Don't worry, I got you. PhoenixAbrasives.com. Phoenix Abrasives supplies superior abrasive products for every application: knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrication, floor sanding, and crankshaft. Belts, grinding, cutting discs, flap discs, surface grinding, surface conditioning stuff. It's great. I use it for, I get specific belts from them. And when I go to the checkout, I put in the promo code FB10, and that gives me 10% off, and I give you 10% off. So get yourself some get yourself some belts, get yourself some stuff to get you squared away, grind them knives, grind them crankshafts, whatever you're doing, get yourself some of that phoenixabrasives.com, use that 10% off FB10. I want to thank my sponsors. I know I was out last week. I have a doctor's note. I don't have a doctor's note, but I feel like it's a pretty good reason. A couple weeks ago, I did an episode called, I think it was called Summer Break, and I was talking about what's going on in the family, the Fader family in general, and then I think I talked about Spain a lot. And one of the things I was talking about, my older sister Jenny, and I'm not getting emotional, guys. Let me tell you what's going to happen this episode before we get any further. I'm going to tell you what happened. I'm going to talk about the life of my sister. I'm going to tell a few jokes. I'm going to tell a few stories. And I'm going to tell you the last thing she said to me, which is hilarious. And we're going to embrace the life and of my wonderful sister, Jenny. So I'm not getting choked up. I just don't have any water. And I'm kind of didn't plan for this part. The hawking and shining was fine. So I talked about my sister Jenny, and one of the things I said is she had had a pretty pretty bad. She was very ill, and that she had a pretty bad prognosis. And while she did have a bad prognosis, she had pretty much late stage pancreatic cancer, and it was very aggressive. And after I saw her. In June, she succumbed to it a couple weeks later. And, I can't believe it. My family can't believe it. My other sister, Carrie, can't believe it. My wife and daughter can't believe it. And it's very sad. But what I've been spending the last, she died 6 days ago. And I really been thinking a lot about her and her influence on me. And I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about her and just tell what an incredible person she was and the influence that she had on me and on a lot of other people. And don't worry. This isn't going to be one of those, oh God, I don't need an obituary class. Listen, some of you motherfuckers need to know how it is, and I'm going to tell you how it is, and I'm going to tell you what to do. So just bear with me. This is me fine. So my sister Jenny was born in 1952, and my first memory of Jenny... My dad was born in 1923, and he was 50 years older than me when I was born. So it'd be like now if I had a baby, which is like madness to me. So my dad was married about four times. I'm saying about four times because we don't 100%. I mean, there's a lot we don't know. I'm gonna get back to that. So my dad's second marriage, he had my two sisters, Carrie and Jenny. Jenny was older, and Carrie was a younger sister. And they grew up, and they had a, you know, someday I'm going to get Carrie on. I want to get a little bit more history on their life. But my first memory was meeting Carrie and Jenny. I just remember when I was very young, maybe three or four, I remember this these young people coming into our house. And they were youthful, and my father was like a suit and tie guy for work, and you know, I saw my mother and father as these parental figures, and didn't have this kind of youth, like teenage, late teenage youth. And I remember these young women coming into my room and just being just smiling and laughing and hugging me and kissing me and grabbing me, and I just remember. This is some of my first memories. I remember just this love of this different type of person that I was used to. I was used to like children, and I was used to, you know, parents, but I was not used to this kind of, you know, over, you know, 17, 19 year old youthful, you know, this is back in the 1970s too. So when I was born, Jenny was 21 and Carrie, I believe was, she was 18, 17 or 18. And my dad explained to me that they were my sisters and I didn't fully understand how if by the time I'm like five, I can't understand. I was under the impression that the sisters were in your house. And what my dad ended up having to kind of explain was they were my half sisters and he had been married before and they're, you know, and I kind of understood, but I didn't really understand. But the thing is, I loved them. They'd come to the house and they would terrorize me, run, but in the sweet way. They would come to the house, they'd run around my room with me and laugh and tickle me and hug me and kiss me and do all this fun stuff and bring me things. And I remember when they would leave, I remember being in this sweaty, riled up state. And my parents would say, "All right, Jeffrey, it's time for bed." And I'd be like, "How can I go to bed? I am like on a million right now." And I couldn't get to bed. I was sweating through my pajamas. I was just like a wreck. And I remember saying to my dad, my mother would say, "Well, you know, your sisters, they just love you." And I said, "Well, if they love me so much, why are they making me like this crazy? I can't go to bed." And it was this wonderful. I also remember them taking me places. My mother was very cool. You know, my mother was like their stepmother, but they were old enough that they weren't in the house. I remember Carrie and Jenny and Jill, were taking me out in the stroller and they would show me the city. And I remember I'd see these tall buildings and they would tell me that later in life that I would look at a building and I would say, "I never seen that before. How come I never seen that before?" And they used to love that I would say, "Oh, why not?" Anything I hadn't seen before, I would point it out and be like, "Oh, look at that. I never seen that before." So they would tell it. And I just remember this just overwhelming love, like this overwhelming love from, my sisters. But it felt like maybe they were closer to being like uncles and aunts. But at the same time, they were just amazing. And now at the time, when I'm 4 or 5, my sister Jenny and Jill opened up Three Lives and Company. Three Lives and Company in 1978 was, when I was about 5, was New York's greatest small bookstore. And you can actually, it's still there. And it's still exactly the way they left it. So they open up this amazing bookstore. They were involved in the book community, the writers, and they opened up this bookstore on 6th Avenue, and they ended up moving it to 12th and Waverly. And it was Jenny, it was Jill, which is her friend. And we're going to talk about Jill, who I love. Jill is like my third sister. Jill knew me when I was born. And she is my sister as far as I'm concerned. And Colleen Webb, and they opened up Three Lives and Company. What Three Lives and Company was this incredible bookstore down in the West Village, and it was home to writers and actors and artists, and it became this incredible hub of like these creative people. And they had amazing books, and it was beautiful. It was a beautiful store, and they had a very specific taste. Jenny had gone to the High School of Art and Design and had a really, like, a, you know, she, my father was a painter, her mother was a painter. She had a real high, you know, aptitude for art. Same thing with my other sister, Carrie. And it was incredible. And I just remember going down to the bookstore, and it was incredible. It was amazing. At the same time, I remember vividly my father coming into my room, and I was very young, must have been 5 or 6, and he said, "I want to take you to see Jenny." And I said, "Oh, great! Oh, I can't wait! I love Jenny." And he said, "Well, I want you to know that there's something going on, and I don't want you to be scared." And I said, "Why would I be scared? I'm going to see Jenny. You know, she came in the house." Tore my ass up, tickled me until I couldn't breathe anymore, and begged for mercy. I loved her. She spoiled me. She treated me. And he said, "Well, we're going to be visiting her in the hospital." And this is in the 70s, late 70s, so 78, 79. And I said, "Well, is she okay?" And I'm not going to pretend like I know exactly what happened, but he said, "Well, I don't want you to be worried because she doesn't have any hair." And I said, "I don't understand." "Well, she had cancer. She had cancer, and he wanted to bring me to the hospital to cheer her up." She had ovarian cancer, which is the fact that she survived in the late 70s, ovarian cancer, was stunning. And I remember being at the hospital. I remember it was kind of the summertime. And I remember like the hot New York 70s summer and going to this kind of like, you know, it wasn't a beautiful, I remember it being very sterile, the sterile hospital. And I remember how bad it was. But beforehand I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, she doesn't have any hair. Because of this illness, she doesn't have any hair. And I said, oh, I know what to do. And I went in the closet and Dad had given me a fur cap. It was a fur skin hat. And I said, well, I'll bring this and then she can wear it. And then she won't feel bad that she doesn't have any hair because then I'll give her this hat and there's all sorts of hair on it. And they thought that was like the sweetest thing. And we went, and I brought the hat and she smiled and it cheered her up and stuff like that. And she ended up going into remission and just miraculously surviving. As I was getting older, my dad would take me down to the bookstore, and I just loved the bookstore, and I became like the mascot, and there were all these like young, vibrant people, and famous people were coming in, and we're going to get into all the famous people. It was the place to be. Like, the New York Times wrote about Three Lives and Company. Writers wanted to be there, artists and actors. I remember when I got older, Madonna would go there all the time, and Gwyneth Paltrow would go there all the time, and Matt Dillon. They filmed the movie Bright Lights, Big City. If you ever see the movie Bright Lights, Big City, that is one of Michael J. Fox's most early and serious roles. And he met his wife on the set there, Tracy Pollan, and they would close the shop down to rent it out. And there was a picture. Jenny took a picture. Jill took a picture. And it was in the bookstore. It was Michael J. Fox and Keith Richards. And there was like the most famous people would go down there. Famous actors, famous writers. It became a really like, you know, a posh place, you know, important place to be for just the vibe of that. They created a community. And Three Lives was like, I mean, even today, like, I know writers who kind of reached out to me when she'd passed away who were like, you know, how important Three Lives was. So as I'm getting older, when I get to about 13, and my sister used to take me around and she was there for me and stuff like that. And once my parents got divorced, there was this weird change in my household. And at the time, my sisters didn't live with us. They were older. They were out the door. They were doing their thing. When my parents got divorced, I always usually refer to the fact that I was alone a lot and I listened to Howard Stern. Well, it's true. My father really kind of went on to live his life. My mother was trying to get it together, dealing with her mental health issues and the fact that at the time there was this like weird acceptance of divorce. Divorce in New York City during the 80s was like huge. And it was almost like it was to the point where it didn't even seem like people were fighting for their marriages. It was just like part of the fabric of society, which was, now that you think about it, it was totally crazy. And I remember being alone a lot. My mother was trying to get her job and also trying to like get her mental health right. And she was with friends a lot. And I got to the point where there was this concept of the latchkey kid, where it was very commonplace for younger kids, especially of divorce, to be home a lot. So I think that kind of like that societal norm allowed to be that my mother thought it was okay for me to be alone. So it was about 14. I was home a lot, like weekends and nights. And my mother was out with trying to get a new job and, you know, try to live her life and try to figure things out. And I was home a lot. And then by the time I got to be 13 or 14, I started taking the subway. And once I took the subway, I started to figure out that I could make it down to Jenny's bookstore, Three Lives and Company, Jenny and Jill's bookstore, by myself. So I would take the 6 train from 59th Street and I would take the 59th Street I'd take the 6 train down to Astor Place, and then I would walk to Astor Place, and then I would walk down 8th Street, and I'd pass by all the great stores that used to be there. And there were Papaya King, the hot dog guy, and there were all this stuff, and I'd walk into the store. And once I figured out how to walk to my sister's store or take the train to walk, I was there a lot because I was alone. And when I would go there, there were these, you know, I'm now 14 or so, and all of a sudden now there are these, you know, the people who work for Jenny are these young, vibrant people, and there are all these young, you know, good-looking people in the store, and her employees are nice, and everyone's treating me like the mascot, and I'm starting to realize that there are no men working at Three Lives and Company. None. There are no men. It was all these young women and all these women, and there was just like there was this vibrance of the West Village of New York. And funny enough, is the book when I tried to describe the bookstore to people, I tried to describe the bookstore to people. The funniest part was there was never comic books. There was never a children's section. There were never, like, I told Jenny, I said, you should have Tintin books in here. Tintin was my favorite. Asterix and Tintin were my favorite. And I said, oh, Tintin books would do great. You should have, how come there are no comic books? There are no, you know, you don't have anything for kids. So when I was, like, younger, when I was, like, 11 or 12, and people would ask me about my family, I'd say I would proudly talk the fact that my sister owned a bookstore. And they said, what kind of bookstore it was. And I would refer to it as an adult bookstore because I didn't know what a real adult bookstore was. I didn't know what, you know, that was. But I realized that because in my mind, I'm thinking it's not a true bookstore because they don't have stuff for kids. Like, there were no stuff for kids. So I was constantly saying, oh, my sister owns this adult bookstore down in the West Village. And the looks people would give me would be like, how? It was like, it's hilarious now, but at the same time, I felt as though I was really kind of like describing it well, but I clearly wasn't. I loved going down there, and then I loved the way I was treated, and Jenny would take me out, and we'd get a hot dog and Grace Papaya, we'd do all this stuff together, and I felt like it was a place that I was safe, because they knew that I was alone. They knew that I was basically by myself. I was coming down to their, you know, at 14, I was taking the subway by myself to, you know, which it wasn't as nice as it is now, and it ain't that nice now. And I remember there was a time where I'm looking through the bookstore and Jenny was kind of doing some things and, you know, she was going to, you know, we're going to go and do something. She would take me out. And I remember looking around and I found this section and it was all these gay books, gay, homosexual, you know, section. And I'm thinking to myself, because I'm going to an all-boys school and I'm completely like, you know, when you're in an all-boys school in Manhattan in the 80s, you can only imagine what we're calling each other. And we're completely intolerant, completely intolerant. And I'm looking around like, I cannot believe my sister has all these gay books. Does she even know that she has all these gay books in the store? And I remember turning to Jenny and I was like, what's up with all these? Insert your homophobic slur. And I'm like, what's up with these books? And Jenny just looked at me and she's like, Jeff, I'm gay. And I'm like, yeah, right. Yeah, whatever. I never met anybody who was gay. I never knew anything about it. I was being gay or being homosexual was the butt of jokes at my, you know, my high school. So I had no idea. And I just like was like, yeah, right. Yeah, that's the reason. Yeah. And I probably, you know, he was younger, and I would say to her, why don't you have a boyfriend or something like that? And she would just like be pissed at me. So I was at my dad's house for. I was at my, not too long after that whole thing. And I'm just like, you know, all the girls at the bookstore, they're like treating me like I'm this mascot. Like I'm the mascot. I'm the cute little Jenny's, the older owner's younger brother. And who was like the scamp and blah, blah, blah. Let's go to my dad's house. I'll never forget this. My dad was sitting in my dad's house. The weird thing was with the way the divorce worked was, I would be at my mother's house Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and my father's house Tuesdays and Thursdays, and every other weekend, it was somebody else. So one weekend was mom, one weekend was dad. I was never really in the same house for two nights in a row. So everything was on my back. I was, you know, it felt like the walk of shame. I didn't have a room at my dad's place. I was on a rollout couch. I didn't have clothes at his place. So he was, you know, we were cleaning my day's clothes for the next day. It sucked. It was totally sucked. But I remember going to my dad's house and my dad sat me down for dinner. It was just the two of us just before we met his wife. And he says, Jeff, I got to talk to you about something. And he says to me, he goes, I need to talk to you about Jenny. And I said, oh, I just saw her. And he says, Jeff, I have to tell you something that you need to know. You need to know that your sister is a homosexual. And I was like, I fell out of the chair. And I didn't fall out of the chair because I felt like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm married. My sister's gay. I fell out of my chair because this person that I loved for 14 years and I cherished, I loved Jenny. Jenny did everything for me. She took me places. She spoiled me. She treated me like an amazing person. She loved me and I loved her. I loved her, the things that she would say, the jokes that she would tell. I loved everything about her. And I fell out of the chair because I felt like, I think that I must have insulted her a million times. I felt this incredible pang of guilt. And it wasn't because of how I felt about, I mean, I didn't know anything about gay except for the fact that when I was in high school, it was like the butt of jokes, you know? And all I felt was terrible because I felt like, oh my God, I might have been insulting my sister this whole time. And it really changed my life. And the reason why it changed my life is because I realized, and the weird thing was, you know, I grew up on the Upper East Side and I wasn't really exposed to a lot of different kind of cultures or people. And my dad kind of sheltered me in that situation. And he was very like controlling of me in regards to the music I was listening to and stuff like that. But I never really had a lot of experience with that. And what it kind of showed me was the fact that I just loved Jenny and I didn't care about, you know, anything other than I really loved her. And it changed the way I felt about it because I felt as though, you know, when you meet people, you know, you care about them regardless of whatever, however they live. And it made me a better person, frankly. And I talked to her about this on when we last talked, and I thanked her. I thanked her for making me a better person because it wasn't that I needed to be told that, you know, I about feelings of, you know, homophobia or anything like that. But it was more about the fact that my love for her superseded any preconceived notions of the kind of person that she was or who she loved. And then all of a sudden I realized, because I was an idiot, then I realized that her girlfriend or wife was Jill. Jill Dunbar, who is my sister, been there since day one. I love Jill. Jill is from birth to, I'm in the tank for Jill. Jill's unbelievable. Jill, who was the heavy lifting of Three Lives, actually was the person who helped get me an audition. I got an audition to be in Blue Lagoon 2. That's a deep cut. I'm not talking about that this time. And when I became a sculptor, when I declared my art major, and my dad says to me, well, if you're going to be an artist, you got to work for artists. Jill had created this fax of telephone numbers of artists that she had known, or she got through her connections. She was in the gallery business. It was this incredible fact. Someday I got to find it and I'll frame it. It was a who's who of artists with phone numbers. This is before the phone. This is before the internet and like some websites. And I called and I ended up getting work. And it was because of Jill. And I'll never forget it. And Jill is just, I mean, she's my sister. That's it. Period. Done. End of sentence. So I remember being very, very sad when I talked to Jenny and telling her how bad I felt for all the things I said. I mean, I'm sure I've said a million, you know, in front of her, in front of, you know, looking at the books that she had in her bookstore. I'm sure that I said some things that were probably very hurtful. And, or maybe they weren't that hurtful and she just referred to me, you know, she just called me an asshole, which she did a lot. And I never felt it as insulting. I felt like when she called me an asshole, I never felt like, oh my God, she must be mad at me. You asshole. So I think that was a very huge part of our relationship because I cherished her. I cherished everything she did for me. And when my parents were divorced, she took me in. She would let me stay with them in their apartment on 11th Street. What was it? 11th Street? No, Three Lives on 10th and Waverly, and they lived on 12th Street next to where St. Vincent's used to be. They had a great apartment, and they used to take me in, and some nights I would, before I go to, instead of going home to my mother or my father, I would stay at their house, and they'd go to school the next day on the subway. And we bought food, and we had fun. Jenny and I used to go out for hot dogs all the time. Jenny was an inconvenient vegetarian. So she was a vegetarian all the time. And, but when she was with me, she knew that I was the best vehicle so that she could have a hot dog. So we go to Gray's Papaya. we would go to, there was a place called a Dallas BBQ, which was this kind of like cheap NYU barbecue place. It's still around, but I don't think it's on 8th Street anymore. But it was like you could go there and you'd get, you know, New York fucking barbecue, boiled ribs and cornbread and half a chicken and French fries. And it was like that most of the, you know, a lot of people were taking dates there because it was just an extraordinary amount of food and it was very cheap. So Jenny and I used to go there all the time. Jenny used to use me as an excuse to go get some hot dogs or get some fucking barbecue. And I'll never forget, we used to go, we'd have these little fun adventures and we'd go get something to eat. And I remember one time, and this is how vicious she was in the best way. I'm saying vicious in the best possible way. She had an incredibly cutting humor. And she had a beautiful viciousness to her that was hilarious. I remember one time we were walking to get something. I think we were going to John's of Bleecker Street. She introduced me to John's of Bleecker Street because John's of Bleecker Street was only a couple blocks away from Three Lives. And I remember we were walking down Christopher Street. And I remember... Christopher Street is a very gay street. When I say gay street, I mean like there's a lot of, you know, gay men in there and bars and all that stuff, which is, you know. And I remember walking with Jenny and I remember some dude like in leather barked at me. Fucking barked at me. I was a child. I was like 14 or 15. And I was talking to Jenny and she wanted me to, I don't know, I said something. She wanted me to behave about something. And I said, "That guy just barked at me, Jenny." And Jenny turns to me without a second. She goes, "Yeah, and if you don't behave yourself, I'm going to sell you to him. I'm going to sell you to white slavery." And I was just like, "Oh, my God. Oh, the thing to say." And she started cackling, and it was really hilarious. And it was just like, she was just so funny. And I remember she'd take me to Dallas BBQ, and then she would say afterwards, "Our clothes smell so bad, we got to burn our clothes." As I got older... she would meet my girlfriends and she would kind of tell me how she felt about my different girlfriends. I used to bring girlfriends to the bookstore to kind of like show people I was a big shot. My sister had the biggest bookstore in the United States or in New York. It was an incredible bookstore and they had just tons of, that was my move. My move when I was dating girls was to show that I had some class and I had a little bit of like, it wasn't just like, you know, I had some, you know, my sister was intelligentsia. And all of a sudden now I'm like, you know, whatchamacallit, you know, I'm like a high, you know, I have some character behind me. I'm not lacking in depth. I have to have some depth. And I just remember one of the funny things is like, you know, when you talk about, people in general, Jenny was hilarious. But she wasn't the stereotypical lesbian. And when I say that, I'm saying that with peace and love. The older generations are different. The older generations, and now I ended up becoming like, once I was lesbro for a while. And then I was all of a sudden, I was the only straight person in the bookstore. I didn't ever work there, but like I was invested in the lesbian culture. And I started to realize that, you know, you have all these different, you know, stereotypes. And Jenny kind of broke all those stereotypes because she was relatively intolerant of people in general. And the hilarious part is she started to like become far more like militant isn't the right word, but she was very opinionated in regards to lesbians and different types of lesbians and gay people and stuff like that. It was actually pretty funny. So when I went to college and I decided to become an art major, everybody was shocked. And actually, Jenny talked to me about that a couple of weeks ago. She said, "I was always surprised when you became an art major because I just didn't know where this came from." When I was before high school, I said this on the last podcast and I just want to reiterate it. There was a moment where I really didn't have anything going on in terms of what I was going to do with my life. Like I didn't have any interests. And Jenny would take me out and I liked comic books and I watched TV, but I wasn't interested in things. And she said to me, she was the only person to ever say to me, "I'm worried that you don't have any interests. You don't have any interests." And I didn't even know what she meant, but it scared the shit out of me because I really believed in her. She was very smart. She was brilliant. She was very astute. And she and Jill and Helene built this incredible bookstore incredible bookstore, like out of nowhere. She was my father's favorite. She was the firstborn, but she was also, she was my dad's favorite. And one of the reasons why she was my dad's favorite is because she had created this, I mean, they were in the New York Times all the time. She had become an expert at the small bookstores in New York. She was his confidant. She was my confidant, but he doted over Jenny, which is amazing because he came from a different generation. And there was 1923, served in World War II. He really didn't. I mean, that was his generation was really quite homophobic in general, but I'm under the impression that he was homophobic in the beginning, but his deep love and respect for Jenny superseded that. And she was definitely his favorite. That there's no question about it. And he would, to the point where I found out Jenny had told me one of the reasons why my parents broke up is because my dad was cheating on my mom and he was making all the phone calls from the bookstore. And my dad, when I got to a certain age, Jenny felt that I needed to know. And it was like, shocking and stuff like that. But, Jenny was my dad's confidant. So she told me that I'm nervous because you don't have any interests. And then I really started to get involved with thinking about it. And I said this on the last time that, when you're a parent, your obligation is to prepare your children for life. And part of that is also helping them figure out not figuring out what they're going to do, but give them the tools to figure out what they can do, show them some interest. I would say that the most important thing that she did was to, hold on a second. One of the most important things that she did was to, I'm dealing now with Jenny, her last wish was to have my daughter have her car. So today we're having the car is being shipped up from Florida. My sister's car. She wanted my daughter to have her car. So I'm getting texts in regards to that. So sorry for that. She was his confidant. And when I got to the point where I really didn't know what to do, my dad was a painter, my sisters were painters and stuff like that. I thought, well, maybe I should get an art. And they were shocked when I became an art major because they just never saw it coming, And the interesting thing is, and I'll tell you, one of the last conversations that Jenny and I had, she told me that how proud she was of me, number one, but she didn't think that she was worried that she said on her goddamn deathbed, she says, I was always worried that you were going to be a dullard. When you were younger, I thought you were going to be a dullard and you really kind of changed my mind, which was really pretty amazing. So get to college, get out of college, bring my wife now was my girlfriend at the time, moved to New York, and Jenny loved Hillary, and we always had a lot of good times together. One of the things that happened was Jenny started to make sculpture. And one of the sculptures that she started to make was based off of something that I've always wanted. When I was a kid, all I wanted was a dog. And Jenny would say, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want for your birthday? What do you want? And I said, I want a dog. I want a dog. I want a dog.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Anytime she asked me, I always wanted a dog. And we never got a dog. But Dad thought it was a big mistake to have a dog in the city. And one year, I got this present from Jenny, and it was this little dog house. It was this little red dog house, and it was beautiful. It was this tiny little house. It was like the size of like a grapefruit. It was this tiny house, And all of a sudden, she started to make more of these little houses. And then what she started to use was she started to use like a lot of imagery that she had. She had book jackets that she had. She started, you know, things that she found. And she was this collage. So she'd make these houses with this collage. And they were beautiful. And they were stunning. And she ended up having this meteoric rise as a sculptor. Her resume from like early 2000s or 1999 to like, you know, for 8 years, her show, she had solo shows all over New York. She was really, it was an incredible situation. The houses were just amazing. These little houses. If you go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, I'm going to have some pictures and some of those are going to be that the little houses in it. And she was written up at the Times and she became a really serious sculptor based off of these beautiful little homes. I'm actually going to link her website with all the houses and stuff like that in the bio. So if you want to kind of get more information in regards to her. She became this incredible artist, an incredible sculptor out of nowhere. And then there was these articles and they say, how did you come up with this concept? Because the homes were, I mean, when she talks about the homes, a house is four sides with a roof and everyone lives in it. And they have these, so everyone tells a story and she would have these houses with like, you know, she would have collages on them and they're different shapes and they were just everything about them. They were craveable and beautiful and fantastic. And they all told stories. And in these articles, she would say, my stupid brother wanted a fucking dog. And after I just didn't want to hear about it anymore. So I made him a little doghouse. And ever since then, I just started making more of these little houses. And the interesting thing is, it's almost very similar to my lures, the lure sculptures I've made, where it isn't about one. It's about the sum of the parts. When you have all these houses together, all of a sudden you have these interesting towns. Like if you have, and I have about, I used to steal them from her. She was stealing lures from me, and I steal houses from her. And when you have all these different houses together, these little houses, you're creating this weird, like, town. And the same thing with the lures. It wasn't about one. It was about as many as possible having the tackle box. So there was a lot of connections in regards to her work and my work, and there was a lot of inspiration in regards to both of them, which I thought was awesome. And she coveted my lures. She used to fucking steal them out of my shop. All of a sudden, I'd see a treble hook over her shoulder, and she'd take a fucking big lure and put it in the car. And I gave them to her anytime she wanted one. I gave it to her, and then she'd give me houses, and I have the houses in the house, and it was pretty remarkable. And her sculpture was amazing, and she has this amazing shop in Greenport, Brooklyn, Greenport, Long Island, where they kind of emigrated to. I used to make jokes. I'm going to make jokes later. I got to tell some stories. Her houses were amazing, and everyone loved them, and she just became, you know, very well known. And then there was a couple years, you know, about 10 years ago, she kind of stopped making the houses. It kind of didn't interest her anymore. Worked on paintings. She did all these paintings. And when my daughter was born, she freaked out. I mean, she freaked out in the best possible way. She behaved towards my daughter the way she behaved towards me, where it was, I refer to it in an Instagram post as she pounced on Lila with just ferocious love. Like she pounced on the love, like she pounced on her and she just held her and she kept her and she would take her places and she would do the same thing that she did with me. And I loved it. And Lila just was like in love with her Aunt Jenny. There was a lot of really funny stories, and I just wanted to talk about some of the funny stories. I can't not get to. She had a very contentious relationship with my dad's wife. We all did, but Jenny was like the litmus test because she was we all didn't get along with her. She was a very tough woman to get along with, and Jenny really didn't put up with much. I'll never forget, there's the strangest incident. It was Thanksgiving, one Thanksgiving year. And it was the Thanksgiving where, at the same time, Bill Clinton had just been accused of having a sexual relations with his intern, Monica Lewinsky, which was a total, I mean, at the time, it was a total scandal. Like, you know, it was a total scandal. It was disgusting. It was disturbing. Everything about it was just terrible. And the name Monica Lewinsky was all over the news all the time, every paper, on the topic of conversation, watercolor, you know, a water cooler conversation, Monica Lewinsky. And I remember we get to Thanksgiving. It was the first Thanksgiving where Monica Lewinsky, it must have happened, you know, not too long ago. We went to my dad's place for Thanksgiving, and there was a lot of extended family there. I'm not sure if Carrie and her husband Randy were there, but Jenny was there, Jill was there, and Hillary. There was one of the first years I brought Hillary up for the weekend or for a holiday. And then, you know, there was a lot of family there. And Jenny would walk around, and then she would say, I don't want to hear, she made an announcement, I don't want to hear the name Monica Lewinsky today. I'm not interested. And anyone who says Monica Lewinsky, you got to owe me, you owe me 5 cents. So I'm just saying it. So you, if I hear the word Monica Lewinsky, I'm going to put my hand out, you're going to give me a nickel. So all day, everyone's talking about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, and all this, all you can hear throughout the whole day, 5 cents, 5 cents, 5 cents, 5 cents. And she, it was hilarious, but it was very, you know, it was hilarious. So I'll never forget, there were one of the first toasts at the Thanksgiving, you know, Thanksgiving meal, you're being thankful for everyone around here. My old man made this big meal, and he's sitting down at the table. And I will never forget, his wife stood up and made the announcement that if she had the opportunity to, how should I say this as dignified as possible, to orally satisfy Bill Clinton, she'd do it in a heartbeat. This was a toast. She said it, and the look on, and I'm saying, I said that as nice as possible. This is a fucking obituary, you know, podcast. I can't, you know, say it too bad, even though I did talk about the gator piss, but whatever. And I'll never forget this, just like, it was like she sucked all the air out of the room. Everyone's like, oh my God. And my sister Jenny is looking at this woman who said the most disgraceful thing on a number of levels. Number one is she just basically emasculated our father in front of everybody. I mean, saying that you sucked the president's dick in front of your husband who made this big dinner at his house is so, I mean, it's so beyond the pale of grotesque, number one. And number two is my sister, my loving sister, Jenny Fader, was a Gold Star lesbian. You know what a Gold Star lesbian is? Gold Star lesbian is the highest level of lesbians, as far as I'm concerned. Never dabbled. Always completely 100% gay from day one. No questioning. There was no questioning. This is the mark of a very secure person. A person who isn't like, well, I don't know. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you're talking about, I mean, that's the reason why they're Gold Star. There ain't never been a boy. There ain't even so much of a kiss. Nothing. I'm gay. Gold Star lesbian. So for my sister, who had such a high rank, to listen to this disgraceful conversation, she was more, I remember her jaw drops, and she's like, I gotta go. We can't do business with this person. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that was the moment where Jenny was like, yeah, we can't have anything to do with this woman. You know, it was just so, everything about it. It's like, how could you do that to my father? How could you say that in front of my father? How could you say it to all of us? How could you make this disgraceful, disgusting announcement? It was so gross. And I remember just being like, stupefied, but at the same time, seeing the abject horror on my sister's face. Like, why would anyone admit to something like that? I'll never forget that story. It was so fucking funny. I called my sister the Malcolm X of lesbians. But she was closer to the Louis Farrakhan of lesbians, because she had a real, oh shit. Listen, I got to pause it for a second. I'll be right back. Hey, what's going on? I'm back. All right. So listen, that was the truck delivery. The truck delivery of my sister's car for my daughter. It's en route, and I had to take that call. When I left, I was saying that Jenny was the Louis Farrakhan, Malcolm X of lesbians, which is hilarious. And I'm saying that because she had a very, very, like, it was interesting. It was learning a lot about, I don't, you know what? I'm not 100% sure she was as tolerant as you would think that a lot of lesbians would be. And she said to me, I remember when I told her that I was going to marry Hillary and I wanted Jenny to be at the wedding. We didn't have any, no one had to do anything. There was no bridesmaids. There was no, I had a best man, my man, Jamie, who Jenny loved. And I had him on the beat. One of the original episodes of Full Blast Podcast, Jamie Montgomery was my best man. But we didn't have anything else. And I remember at one point my sister taking me aside and just saying, look, I'm going to come to your wedding because I love you and I love Hillary. But I want you to know something. I don't want anything to do with anything that has any kind of heterosexual rituals. I looked at her like, what? She's like, being gay for me, especially in the 60s and the 70s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, we were outsiders. And I liked that. And I don't want the trappings of heterosexual rituals and lifestyles. I don't really feel comfortable around it, if I'm being honest with you. And I really appreciated that. And then I was just like, whoa, just go to a fucking wedding, have a drink, dance a little bit and have some food. This isn't like some sort of occult situation. I didn't know nobody sacrificed, but it was interesting because it was really something I'd never really heard before. And it wasn't a question of wanting equality or acceptance. It was like separatism. That's why I called her Malcolm X. I'm like, she's like, yeah, I have no interest. And she was super uncomfortable with the wedding, and it wasn't because of us. She was happy for us. We used to come to their house all the time. We used to stay with them in Greenport. We loved everything about them, but it was like this very interesting, it was an interesting part of her personality that I didn't know. She was wonderful, and she gave me great advice, and I was always very, my dad had been married 4 times, but Jenny had been with Jill for only, that was it. I mean, I was 27. They'd been together 27 years, and, my old man hadn't, you could add a couple of his weddings together, and that might have been 27 years, but other than that, all of a sudden, when I'm seeing, like, these proper relationships where it's, longevity and like respect and love. I mean, Jenny and Jill are doing it. I remember also at the wedding, Jenny was very concerned that my father's wife was going to take over after that whole, I'm gonna suck Bill Clinton's dick if I had the chance. Now all of a sudden, you never know. Now all of a sudden, all the bets are off. She's gonna say something wacko. So, what she turns to me and she gave me, she says, I'm going to give you advice on this day. I'm coming here out of love for you, but that's about it. I don't want to, don't let that woman steal your Barbra Streisand moment. And it was so funny. It made a lot of sense. It was like, this is your Barbra Streisand moment. Don't let her Barbra Streisand moment. And that was really kind of like a funny thing to say. She always had a good relationship with Hillary. When Hillary was, however, there was one moment where it was almost very, very bad. We were retelling the story last night. My sister had this great workshop in Greenport, and it was the basement of their house. And I remember that, Jenny wanted to play a trick on Hillary. So she was down in the shop, and she screamed so loud that we thought something really bad had happened. It was like the most chaotic, terrifying scream we'd ever heard. And Hillary's nursing student, she's like the and she races down, and Jenny's clutching her finger going, and Hillary's ready for whatever the problem is. And then she says, Jenny, show me your finger. And Jenny, her face smiles. She sticks up her finger, and she's got one of these joke Band-Aids with the fake nail through the finger. She yelled so loud, her neighbors came over. Hillary was furious. It was really funny, actually. But now that, it was incredible. It was a blood-curdling scream. Hillary comes down. She puts her finger up. There's the fake nail. Jenny's got this shit-eating grin on her face. She thinks it's hilarious. Hillary was going to kill her. Hillary was going to kill her. And Jenny was actually nervous. She thought she was going to get in trouble. We've always had a great relationship, and during the pandemic, it was tough because, you know, her health was okay. She'd had some surgeries in general, but, you know, she was very concerned about her health. Obviously, when you have cancer at a young age, especially, you know, there's always the gloom of maybe it coming back at some point. That was always something that was on her mind. I know that she always felt as though there is a very good chance that, you know, at some point it'll come back. That's what happened to my father. My father had cancer. It went into remission, and then it came back and he died from it. You know, a lot of friends who had cancer, there is that real, you know, in the back of your head that it's going to come back. We didn't see her a lot during the pandemic. And then they also spent time down in Florida. Jenny's mother, who is down there, she spent a lot of time with her, helping take care of their mother. And there was, we didn't see her as much. And when one of the last times we saw her, we had an awesome graduation party for Lila, who just finished, you know, high school, getting ready for college. Jenny was just so proud of her. So they went down to Florida. We were always talking every so often, and we would tell funny jokes, and she would talk about things, and, you know, she was very proud of what we were doing. She was just crazy about Lila. She would take when Lila was younger, she'd stay, you know, in the summertime would be Camp Jenny and Jill, where Lila would stay with them for a week, and it was just so wonderful. And then, you know, in the past few months, in the past year, there was a bit of slowdown. There was a lot of slowing down. And, she was down in Florida for about 3 years, and got a call early in the spring. There was questions of whether or not is she okay. And Carrie was down there, and Carrie was kind of like concerned about her health. And when a picture was taken and sent to Hillary to see what she thought, and Jenny was yellow. And as soon as Jenny saw the picture, she turned to me and she says, "We got to go down and see your sister." And it was really like, they didn't get the diagnosis yet, but Hillary was like, this is a dying woman. This is a dying woman, and she's dying fast. We got the diagnosis not too long after, and then we made the arrangements to go down to Florida right after I got back from Spain, teaching with Florentine Kitchen Knives. And Jenny was so happy. We were flying Lila down from California. She was doing her internship in California. I was actually going to do an episode. Lila's been here for 3 weeks, and I was going to do an episode with her. But frankly, she's so kind of like, she's so bummed out, and she's so in mourning. I just didn't really want to put her in a position of feeling vulnerable, especially on a podcast. So we're going to give her some time, and then we'll have her back on at some point. But we went down there, and all Jenny wanted me to do is cook for her. And the great thing was Jenny was up and about. She was having good days. They had made the decision when they found the cancer. She had advanced liver disease, and the cancer had been spread all over the place. So this was like, you know, this was pretty much collision course. When we got down there, she was up and about. She was tired, but she was able to be there. And I said, "I'm going to cook for you." And she wanted me to, she was so happy to see Lila. And before we went down there, she called me up and she says, I have a proposal. I want to talk to you about something." And I was really nervous, you know, my sister's dying. She wants to talk to me about something. And she said, "I want to give Lila my car." Jenny has a Volkswagen convertible, and she wanted Lila to have it. And I said, "Well, Hillary and I talked about it." And then we're just like, I said to Jenny, I said, "I want you to tell her. I'm not going to break the news to her. You're going to break the news to her." And we got down there, and I said to Jenny, I said, "You tell her." "Really?" And I'm like, "Yeah, this is it. I mean, this is it." The doctor said, when they talked about what her diet should be, they said, "Eat whatever the fuck you want. You know, this is a done deal. This is a done deal, and be comfortable and see who you want to see and eat what you want to eat and do what you want to do." And I didn't want to take that away from, I wanted her to be able to have that ability to do it. So, and I'll post, if you go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, I'll show you the picture of Jenny giving the car to Lila. And we cooked for her and we told stories, and it was the most remarkable weekend of my life because I got to tell Jenny everything I always wanted to tell her. And one of the things was is that she changed me as a person. You know, I told her about, when Dad told me that you were gay and I loved you so much. And I always felt like the last thing I ever wanted to do was to hurt you or upset you or something like that. And it changed the way I felt about, you know, just different people leading different lives and giving them, you know, knowing person by the who the person is, as opposed to like, you know, a group. And we talked about that, and she told me, she says, you know, I'm so proud of you. Because I'm so proud of you, you know, about my work, about my business. She loved the knives. She loved what I've created out of nothing. She told me how proud she was of me. And part of that was also the pride that my father never got to say. You know, when my dad was dying, he really didn't. I once asked him, fucking great. Though before my dad died and he was kind of compos mentis, he was able to really kind of talk. I asked him if he had any regrets in life. I was looking for something. You know, he was very closed, you know, very quiet, very cold. And he says, yeah, I do have a regret. He says, I regret I got married so many times, which is such a kick in the balls because it's like, you know, you had, you know, one marriage, you had your daughters, and another marriage, you had your son. And like, it was so upsetting, but at the same time, it was like the perfect, get the fucking guy. So Jenny told me these things, and she said how proud she was of me as a father. She didn't expect me to be the father that I am. She was proud of me about a business owner and as an artist. She says, be honest with you, we were afraid that you were going to be, this is an exact quote, God damn it. She said, we were afraid you were going to be a dullard. A dullard? She's like, yeah, we never knew. When you were an artist, we were shocked. When you were being an art major, we were shocked. We never saw you having any interest in art. And then after, you know, college and working for artists and becoming a working artist, we had really interesting conversations about art that I have to this day with my sister, Carrie. And we cooked for Jenny, and we had a good time. We went out on a Saturday, and then we were going to leave on Sunday afternoon. And they just said that Jenny's just too tired. She's just, all the excitement of us being there, and I cooked whatever she wanted, and we just laughed, and it was just too much for her, and we left. But before we left, I got to see them, and I went into Jenny's room, and I laid down on the bed next to her, and we just started telling stories, and you know, just being very in love, you know, as my brother and, you know, brother and sister. And I had made the decision that I was going to come back. I made the decision that I was going to come back. Probably like we were thinking about. Well, now it would have been this past week, and we're going to come back on. August 16th, we're going to come down. And I thought maybe if she'd hold on. So I said to her, I said to Jenny, because there was this moment of feeling like we're not going to see each other again. And I said, Jenny, I'm coming back. So this is not goodbye. This is I'll see you later. And I think that was really good for her. She was very proud of me, which I didn't expect her to say. And it was like the most rewarding trip we could have had, and I got to say the things that, you know, Hillary told Jenny, that she was like a surrogate mother to me, and how much she meant to Lila, and Lila was really it was really like hard for Lila. You know, Lila doesn't have a lot of like loss, and it was really hard for her, but at the same time she wouldn't have missed it for the world. When I got home, Jenny and I had a lot of conversations. I call her every day. If she'd pick up, some days she wouldn't. It got to the point in the last kind of week and a half, and then Carrie went down to kind of be there for her, which was amazing. And Carrie is unbelievable. At some point, I'll have Carrie on here. My relationship with Carrie has never been better the last 5 years, especially when her husband died during COVID, and we've never been closer. And this whole thing is really, it's almost like having a new sister, because our relationship's changed based off of, you know, loss and other things, and just kind of the fact that, you know, we're losing more people in our lives. So, I'm going to tell you the last conversation I had with Jenny. And, I wanted more out of this goddamn story than I got, but it was unbelievable. So Jenny was and I were talking, and this is before she really slowly within the next couple of weeks, she stopped talking, and things really started to kind of like change and moving, and she was sleeping more. And, you know, the hospice nurses were just kind of like, yeah, it's going to be any day now. So before the, just like a week before, I would say a couple of days after I came back, Jenny was just so, she was so happy with their trip. And, she said something happened that I can't even believe I'm going to tell you. And I said, tell me about it. And she says, you know, I'm dying and I don't want to leave Jill with a mess. So I was trying to help her out. And we would also do a lot of gallows humor. You know, I made some gallows humor jokes to Jenny. And she says, I was helping kind of straighten up through these closets. And some of these closets I hadn't been in a while. And I reached up in the closet and you'll never guess what I found. And in my mind, in my heart, I'm thinking it's the hat that back in the 70s, I wanted my dad to give her. I wanted to give to Jenny when she had cancer because she was, you know, self-conscious about it, losing her hair. And I'm thinking to myself, she's going to reach into that fucking closet and that furry cap's going to be in there. This is going to be unbelievable. And in my mind, I'm just like, this is literally going to be unbelievable. She gets up on a whatever, reaches into the closet, finds this hat. Wasn't the hat. She says, you're never going to believe what I found in the top of the closet. And she said, I reached in and I grabbed it and I threw it to the ground and I was mortified and disgusted and just, you're not going to believe it. I said, what was it? She says, it was a purple dildo. And I started laughing because in my mind, I'm hoping it's the fucking hat. I'm looking for like this wonderful moment where she says, I found the hat you once gave me when I was dying. And here it is again. And we did it now. Fucking purple dildo. In the background, Jill goes, and it moved a little bit too. And we had such a laugh. And I said, how is this possible? You're a gold star lesbian. There are no penis-shaped objects at all. Not even like, you know... I mean, forget it. Zero. This is like goals. This is a, and the funny thing is we're trying to figure out who was it. And I said, it must be one of your, you know, friends. She goes, it couldn't have been one of my friends. The most disgusting, repulsive thing. And it was so funny because it was like the last conversation we had. And we laughed so hard. And I, in my mind, I said, you know, I was really, really hoping it was going to be that furry hat I gave you when you were very ill back in, you know, 1978. And then we had a laugh and I told her I loved her and she told me she loved me and how proud she was of me. And every time we talked, there was definitely this sense of like, that's it. And this is probably going to be it. And I said, listen, I'm going to be coming down and make you a hot dog. You love hot dogs. I'll make you a hot dog. And then we got the message that, you know, Jenny wasn't doing well and that she wasn't taking phone calls and it was all too much for her. And she didn't want visitors. It was just too much. She would just get very overwhelmed very quickly. She got very, you know, exhausted. All of a sudden she stopped eating. And then, because she was voracious, like in the beginning she was voracious. And then, actually on, when was it? August 3rd, Hillary had gotten tickets for us to go to a baseball game. It was Yankees and the Twins. And we went there and I said to Lila, I said, you know what we got to do? We have a hot dog for Jenny. And I got a hot dog with sauerkraut and mustard the way she liked it. And hot dog. She wanted a hot dog. And I took a picture and I sent it to Carrie because Carrie was down there. And so we're having a hot dog for Jenny. And I even posted on my stories. It's like, here's a hot dog. This one's for you, Jenny. And it was really good. I'm not eating hot dogs anymore because I'm still doing the New York City Marathon and I'm trying to blah, blah, blah. You know, that's that for another time. But if I could eat hot dogs all the time, I would. I can't. It's just, they're so bad. And so we get home and then I get a call and it's Jill. Jill is unbelievable. Jill Dunbar is, I mean, she's my sister. And there wasn't a lot of, she's a texter because just like she's got so much going on. And when the phone rang and it was Jill and she told me that Jenny had passed right before she called about 10-ish, 10 at night on August 3rd. It was, It was very, it was sad. It was upsetting. I was grateful though. I was grateful though, because she had a good long, she had two really bad. The last few weeks were really bad. They were really bad. And she was really uncomfortable and upset. And the whole thing was very upsetting. And this is something that she had, you know, what's to say, except for, you know, everyone was just blown away and very tragic. And Helene had come from California to stay with them, to kind of be with Jenny and Jill. And it's still overwhelming. It's still unbelievable. And it's been about a week, and I'm just like, I'm in shock. You know, this person who inspired me, her work inspired me. She gave me advice that I listened to. She wasn't like a parent that told you how to do it. She talked the talk and walked the walk. And she was encouraging of my work. She loved my lures. She loved the knives. She loved the things that I was doing. She always called and she said, I need a t-shirt. Send me some more Fader knives gear. I want more t-shirts. I love representing. I'm so proud of you. And, you know, she was a force, and she was one of, you know, I'm never going to forget. Obviously I'm never going to forget her, but, I wasn't prepared. And I also wasn't prepared for how to deal with it for Lila, because she had the same, very similar relationship. And I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that I had the chance to have this, you know, much more fruitful life because of Jenny. I mean, she showed me more life, than what I was exposed to, especially being alone. She would tell me what she liked about my sculpture. She'd tell me what she didn't like about my sculpture. She'd tell me what direction I should go. She told me what not to. She gave me great advice. You know what the greatest advice she told me about a shop? She gave me the greatest advice. And I've said this on Knife Talk many times. She says, whatever you do with your shop, don't shit it up with crap. Don't shit it up with crap is something I've been saying for a long time. That basically means is only have the stuff that you're going to use for a sculpture. Only going to have the stuff you're going to use for your studio. Don't have the other things. Make your studio for your studio. So, like, even now, my shop's a bit of a wreck, but there's no snow blowers in here. There's no that other thing. However, within the next couple hours, there will be, my daughter's car will be here for a little bit while we figure out the title and the license plate and all insurance and all this bullshit. The last thing I want to say is, probably not the last thing, but what I'm going to say, I'm going to wrap this up, is I had, so when I got the call that Jenny had passed, I called Carrie, who was in the room, and Carrie was in the room with Jenny's body, and she was kind of describing it. And Carrie has a very, you know, she's been around a lot of deaths. She was there from when my dad died. She was there when her husband died. Now she's there when her sister died. She's seen major tragedy. And one of the funny things about my sister is her clothing was, the clothing choices was all like stripes and striped shirts. And like, you know, she liked overall shorts and she liked shorts and she liked these striped t-shirts and Carrie was walking around and she says, she looks very peaceful and, you know, we're playing music and, you know, we're telling stories and showing our memories and this, that, the other thing. And now that I'm looking at her while I talk to you, Jeff, I'm looking at her right now and she still looks like Dennis the Menace. It's just so funny. I mean, if you knew Jenny, and that was like the funniest thing she could have possibly said. She looks just like Dennis the Menace. Well, she was. She would dress like Dennis the Menace. And it was this really, like, you know, have this really fucking beautiful moment. And then it's just like, yeah, she just looks like a fucking Dennis the Menace. So, yeah. So we are doing well, as well as could be. This is a strange situation. I'm really appreciative of Jenny. Jenny was going to be on this podcast a while ago. She could not figure out the mic and stuff like that, and I regret it, but at the same time, she was an incredible inspiration to me and a loving sister and a pioneer. She was, Yeah, she was a pioneer. She was involved in the greatest bookstore Manhattan had ever seen, New York City had ever seen, Three Lives and Company. And what she did and what she built was incredible. Her work was amazing. The relationships that she created, the nurturing that she had, she was a big mocker. She was a big mocker. And she was my beautiful big sister. And I call her my little sister because she's tiny. I'll put some pictures on Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. She's tiny compared to me. And she liked that I had a big, she called me my big thug bro. She liked to tell me she was going to give me a smash, just like Dad would do. And that's a slap, just to let you know. I'm going to slap your face, something she used to say. And with that said, I just want to thank everybody. I'm sorry I didn't have a podcast last week. I was just like, you know what? If I can't fucking use this to get out of a week's worth of work, I don't know what the fuck I can do. That was one thing. There was one thing. I got a lot of great condolences, and I really appreciate everybody who reached out to me. I also got a lot of really lousy condolences. And at some point, either here or on Knife Talk, I'm going to give a my daughter and I were so bummed out. We were trying to cheer ourselves up. So we had this funny game where we rated people's condolences. And I believe that I could teach a lot of you who I think are Gen Z and millennials. I could teach you the etiquette, the proper etiquette of how to console someone in their time of need. And there was letter grades. Some of you guys did great. Some of you guys did excellent. I got some high school friends. I'm obviously my age. Some guys did the right thing, gave me a call, gave me a text. It was cool. And then some of you guys did what's right, and some of you guys had some fucking whack. Some of you guys, not you guys. There was one guy. How much time do I have? And I got to get the fuck out of here because this is going fucking enough already. All right, I'm going to wrap it up in a second. Listen, let me tell you what you do when you do a condolence. The condolence should be short, thoughtful, and unremarkable. Okay. A real condolence, the best, the elite condolences are letters. We don't do that anymore. So a good condolence would be, I'm really sorry for your loss. I'm really sorry to read this. I'm really sorry for your loss. Sending good vibes or prayers, whatever you want to say. Good vibes or prayers to you and your family. That is a great blanket condolence. If I give condolences, I'm going to give a nice, simple condolence where the most important thing is a condolence shouldn't be something where you're asking the person who lost a loved one to do any work. Like, don't write the Magna Carta expecting a response, okay? Don't write a Magna Carta when you give someone, you can't expect the person who was lost to respond back, all right? Number one. Number two is, the most important thing is what I just said in the last one, don't make the person who's lost someone have to do homework. I had one person who sent me a thing. Hey, could you DM me the address of this person? I'm not doing work, dude. This is not my situation. I'm not doing work. And then the other thing is, don't make it about yourself. When you're giving condolences, don't make it about yourself. I had some couple people who were just like, oh, I just lost my sister last week too. And then I end up giving them condolences, which they thank me for. What the fuck? All of a sudden, you're guilting me into giving you condolences when you were supposed to just give me a condolence and that's the end of it? There was a rating system, ladies and gentlemen. There's a rating system, and there was one that was like the worst. And I'll never respond. I'll never tell you who it is, but there was one that was just bad. We were reading them all off, and I was getting a few of them from not just listeners, not this podcast, but like friends and family and people that I know. Some of you guys need to know. I'm going to tell you how to do it. Stay away from emojis. And maybe I'm old school. Don't put an emoji in your condolence. Here's the perfect condolence. You write, I'm so sorry to read this. I'm thinking of you and your family, sending you the best vibes. Please accept our deepest condolences to you and your family. That's it. So that's it. You don't have to. I think that RIP is fine, except for what it condones is the idea of you don't have enough time to write something just quick and eloquent. So when you write RIP, you're telling me you don't have the time to write rest in peace, which is bizarre. RIP, when I saw Ozzy Osbourne, RIP, you know? But like, you know me, and my sister died. You're going to give me, I know I'm being shitty right now, but I'm also trying to change it around. And I know that Jenny would find this to be funny. You don't have to go crazy. You don't have to give me the Magna Carta. You don't have to bow. You don't have to do any of that stuff. I'm really sorry to read this. Seems like a special person. You could throw that in. I really appreciate, you know, I'm sorry what you're going through. Please accept my deepest condolences to you and your family. Perfect. No emojis. I'm sorry. Sorry. For me, I'm a different generation. Maybe that's just me. And I think Jenny would appreciate that too. I mean, my kid and I had a really good, funny time talking about appropriate condolences. Not just one guy gave me the worst. One guy gave me the worst one, and I'm just like, you're brain dead, dude. But it might be your generation. Not 100% sure. So with that said, I want to thank everybody for all the support you've given me. All jokes aside, everything everybody wrote was great. I'm just fooling around. I appreciate everything that everybody's done. We're going to have carry on at some point when we get her all squared away. RIP. I'm not doing that. I can't do that to my sister, Jenny. I can't do RIP, Jenny. That ain't right. RIP, sister. I can't write that. That's some bullshit. I got to end this on the right note. Listen, Jenny Fader will always be with me. I'm a better person for her being in my life. She made me a better person. She made my daughter a better person, made me a better father, made me a better artist, made me a better brother, made me a better husband. She is a giant influence on my life, and I'm very, 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 very sorry that she's gone, and I love her all the time, and I appreciate you, okay? Guys, we're going to see you next week, and we will take it there from here, okay? RIP, Jenny. I can't, wait a second, let's start again. Rest in peace, my dear sister, Jenny, I love you so much. Bye-bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.